There's so much more to this reality than we realize as we're walking around with a materialistic mindset. What really matters is, can we share a moment here? Can we really connect?
There are incredible things that happen in our world, and sometimes we get to see them. And sometimes we need a break from reality to see them. Near-death experience offers that opportunity. Tricia Barker is the author of Angels in the OR, What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation. And she definitely has a survival story. She was an agnostic, and the angels weren't exactly on her playlist. And yet, there they were.
The near-death experience changed everything about the way that I looked at life. I was agnostic at the time and very worldly, very materialistic and driven in that way because I grew up poor. And there were so many moments in life where I questioned what happened when we died and I kind of feared what happened when we died. But yeah, that experience changed everything.
Right after the accident, the doctor, and you finally get one after being pretty much ignored for a while, a long while, the doctor that you, at the time when you do all the questions of, you know, how are you worthy of operating on me, aside from help, please, you can't say no. The BMW, you were impressed by the BMW. And afterwards, you were impressed by the angels in the OR. So it was like, you know, before and after, massive, massive change.
Yeah, I was talking with a near-death experiencer the other day, and he was saying, you can't take any of that with you. You can't shove it all up inside you and take that BMW to heaven. You know, like, all you're taking with you is the love that you gave to this world and the love that you experienced. And that's not, you know, when people say love, you know, that sounds so woo-woo and fluffy, but what it means is just the goodness that you added to this world. What did your life add to this world in a good way? How did you make people feel good? And that's your soul's wealth, in a sense. And so that idea of the BMW didn't matter at all. You know, there's this whole higher consciousness. There's these evolved beings, these light beings that help neurosurgeons. There's so much more to this reality than we realize as we're walking around with a materialistic mindset. What really matters is, can we share a moment here? Can we really connect?
Now, you also saw your grandfather, or a younger version of your grandfather, in your NDE.
What was that like?
He was the only person who I knew, who I was close to, who had died. Of course, you know, their ancestors and people who had died who I wasn't familiar with or didn't know on a personal level, but I knew him. He died when I was 9 or 10, and then I had the near-death experience when I was 22. And he was such a beautiful person in that realm. You know, he looked so much younger. His skin glowed. Much like the angels, he communicated with telepathy. So there's a lot of communication when you become the consciousness of your soul outside of body. You just know certain things without them having to be said. So I felt his love. I felt his comfort. I felt that, you know, he was really just telling me in that moment, hey, I'm just here with you to help in this transition. And at some point he looked to me and asked if I wanted to continue on. But I knew everything was going to be fine, whether I died and stayed in that realm or whether I went back. Like, his presence was there to guide me. And I think many people, when they die, there's lots of deathbed visions where they see their brother, sister, mother, father, you know, someone who's close to them, who's transitioned over. And when my own father died, you know, many years later, I knew that his parents were there to be the guide. So in a sense, he was my guide in that realm.
In the book, you talked about being able to say goodbye, not at the time of death, but just before. There's a sense of that when you reconnected with him the two or three times that he checked back in, that sense of kind of wanting to be where he was, because, and this is, I've just reconnected with PMH Atwater talking about what happens for people who have the near-death experience. And, you know, that sense of longing, of the things aren't as good here as they could be, and I'm not able to fix that. So how come I can't just skip a few lessons and go back home? So how does that work?
You know, there's a lot to the experience. My experience happened in 1994, and I think the world has become so much more open to the idea of mediumship or connecting with ancestors or, you know, talking with our loved ones or just getting those messages. And I think a lot of people who've lost someone have had a profound dream about them that they know is spiritual, or they know there's a connection to them. But it took me a long while. You know, it wasn't immediate, but there were, to talk openly about it, there were always these moments. I would know, like, my grandfather's wife, my grandmother, died when I was in my 20s after the near-death experience, and I knew when she was going to die. I looked in her eyes. I knew it was coming, and I could just see the light coming for her, and I knew that that would happen. And then I felt both of them at different times, painful times in my life, you know, when I needed comfort and no one was around. I felt their love just, like, pour in from the other side, as if I'm still their little granddaughter, still their child that they love so much and they want to comfort. In key moments in life, whether it's an achievement or a painful moment, I know that they're there. And I wish everyone could feel that and be assured of that. And I know other people wish it too. I know it's something that people want. And I just want to say it's there. They are there. They are sending love and they are caring.
In the NDE state, you were aware of the prayers. You had that advantage of being able to see those connections from that realm.
Yeah, that we are deeply connected to one another. And that, I mean, I heard every word that they said, but it was very quickly. But I also knew the connection of feeling that they brought to the prayer. And that interests me because, you know, some people are more sincere. Some people pray out of duty. Some people say they pray and they're not praying. there's a lot to it. And what struck me is I felt who loved me the most or who cared the most. You know, I could feel their heart. And I guess I would want to remind people, too, who've lost someone and maybe they've prayed that person, you know, find healing or stay, that their prayer was not lost, that that person truly felt it, you know, that in their heart, they knew you loved them and they didn't leave this earth wondering if you loved them. It's known we are connected. And in that realm, there's much greater consciousness and, you know, there's much greater connection. That's just obvious. And of course, you know, if someone loves you.
The angels, that's what is, I think, the most profound, because you were able to see them work through the medics. You could see that as it was happening. And, you know, for a quick moment before you transitioned on to other pieces of important information, what was that like?
Yeah, I have to say it shocks me. So, you know, if you, you know, realize the consciousness of an agnostic, I mean, just the first moment outside of my body, when I was looking at my body on the operating table, I was an absolute shock and pretty happy that we'd go on, because I immediately knew that this consciousness outside of my body was clearer, crisper. You know, it filled up the room. I could see from many different vantage points. And I knew that this was not a trick of the mind, not my brain shutting down. But what stunned me were the angels. So, like, you know, my brain could, as an agnostic, I could go, okay, cool, consciousness survives. But then when I saw the angels, I was like, what is this? This is different. This is otherworldly. This is, I felt like a kid. You know, they were so unexpected. I didn't, you know, the Bible mentions angels briefly, but I think the metaphysical community embraces the idea of them much more so than, you know, many religions. And I just didn't have much of a grasp of the idea of angels. And they were so intelligent. That was my first thought, was, wow, these are highly intelligent beings just here for me, just here for my healing. And I bet the neurosurgeons would laugh or freak out or be angry that, you know, that their skill is not just their skill, but it is assisted from these highly intelligent beings. And and as I watched them send this light through the surgeons and into my body, I knew that they were assisting with the healing. Maybe, you know, maybe the neurosurgeons were highly talented, but they were just adding that extra bit of spiritual healing and physical healing in that realm. And I thought, okay, I am going to be fine because these angels are here.
Well, and that part of it is those, there were extensive damages. Okay, so let's not gloss over that. That's why this little extra kick was probably very helpful.
Yeah, so I think the neurosurgeons themselves were very pleased with the surgery afterwards, because I had lost feeling in my left leg when I went into surgery, and I was wondering if I was going to be in a wheelchair, if I was going to walk, and the spinal fragment, or the fragments of bone from my vertebrae, were pressing on the spine in various areas, so they had to take all of those pieces out. They had to reconstruct new bone from bone in my hip and put rods in. And yeah, it was an extensive surgery, and the cause of death was actually internal bleeding. I bled to death, you know, because there were internal injuries, and there's, you know, that's an added complication to the already spinal surgery. So I think I think the angels were there for that bit of, okay, you'll walk, you'll run, you're not going to bleed to death, and we're here.
Tricia Barker, in the book, she includes the quote from T.S. Eliot, "It's worth dying to find out what life is." We'll continue with more about that NDE and the angels. Wendy's Coffeehouse.
I called it being unstuck in time because the near-death experience was this timeless place. And then we come back to this body and our consciousness is trapped in the body. And yet we feel out of time, you know, outside of time. Like, oh, wait, why do I know that this is going to happen 10 minutes from now?
Hello, I'm Wendy, and this is Wendy's Coffeehouse. My guest, Tricia Barker, she had an NDE experience years ago before anybody talked about it and definitely before doctors were comfortable discussing it.
The surgeon, when you tried to connect with her and share this epiphany and share all this wondrous stuff, she's like, you'll be fine. Okay. Yeah. There was a lot of blood. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, keep it real. I'm just the surgeon and, you know, you have a life. So, no malpractice, please. You can tell the responses that you include in the book that somebody was, that she didn't have, I think, because of her credentials, because of saving her license and those kinds of things, she didn't have a comfort level of even acknowledging your near-death experiences. And I don't think that was about you. I think, obviously, it wasn't about you. It was about her being guarded and trying not to rock the boat by saying something that at that time was extremely risky.
In the writing of the book, and I've been on different shows, like I survived Beyond the Back, and they researched her, tried to get in touch with her to see if she would comment. And basically, she died 8 years after my surgery, and she was a young surgeon, and she died in a car wreck, a head-on collision. And Austin had this deficit of not having enough neurosurgeons, and I waited 17 hours. People were waiting 34 hours, just crazy amounts of hours for a surgeon. And I found out more about her, and she was doing groundbreaking work. Like, she was a pioneer. She was, you know, she was a great surgeon, and I was really lucky to have her. And I think she just wanted to focus on, hey, I did a great job. You know, let's look at the fact that you're walking and, you know, you're going to be fine. And, you know, let's move on.
Yeah. Well, she didn't want to get into the death. That. I like that you did the follow-up on her because I'm, for me, from the perspective that I have, it's knowing that the surgeon at that point in time would have been between a rock and a hard place, acknowledging that and possibly getting distracted. And since she is deceased, that, and especially the car accident, that's an interesting synchronicity.
It is. It is. I've given book signings out in California, and this woman came up to me and she didn't really know anything about my surgeon, and she was a medium, and she said, I think your surgeon wants you to connect with her on the other side, that she wants to kind of be your parent or your guardian or just kind of help you in some way. And I thought, oh, that's so beautiful, that's so lovely, like maybe we didn't have that connection in life to talk about it, but now we're connected on the other side.
The after effects of the near-death experience, you are having, in terms of, you know, a greater awareness, more PSI types of engagements. Is some of that still with you? Because for a while you were kind of overwhelmed or aware with premonitions of things that were going on around you. And it was a new trip, should I say?
Yeah, you know, I consciously asked for that to go away, but it would come back at different points in my life. Some days would feel like Groundhog Day, you know, where I would know the whole day before the day would happen. And it was disorienting. I would say that I've mastered, I think, the art of trying to stay more so in the moment and less in my intuition, and only use intuition after meditation or early in the morning, and kind of making it fit into that particular part of my day. Or if I'm giving a reading, you know, like I think using that information to help someone allows me to access it. But yeah, it was new, it was different and disorienting and kind of wild. I called it being unstuck in time because the near-death experience was this timeless place. And then we come back to this body and our consciousness is trapped in the body. And yet we feel out of time, you know, outside of time. Like, oh, wait, why do I know that this is going to happen 10 minutes from now? You know, is life set, you know, or does my free will change it? You know, like what's happening? And so there were all these questions I had, I think, in those early moments. And I didn't have many people to run them by because I was pretty isolated in Texas in the 90s, you know, I thought about, well, should I drive to Sedona and find, you know, a shaman who's going to help me make sense of this? Or do I just suck through it and go, okay, you know, I have some abilities. Can I use them to help my students? Can I use them in my own life? And honestly, I was blind at times. And the only real, I guess, solid thought that came to me is when I'm using it to help others, it seems to work best. So if I was using it to help my students, that seemed to be the best way to make it flow.
Okay, let's take a break. We're going to take a break. My guest, Tricia Barker, author of Angels in the OR, Near-Death Experiencer. And I want to go back into that just a moment of what it was like, the overwhelm, because that is one of the hallmarks that people experience afterwards. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. So how do you manage that? Like she said, I manage it. It's Conscious Living and Power Radio, back in a few. At the very beginning, when you're going into the OR and you're waiting, the attitude adjustment from before the near-death experience to after is pretty profound, but it takes a while to heal some of those relationships because all of a sudden you come back with this expanded awareness and a little bit of overwhelm. But I want to go back into that knowing from that psychic element of having to get reconnected to just being in a physical body, because there's that sense of wanting to be here at the same time. Again, we'll go back into that longing of why, what is this about, and how do I get from point A to point B, from doing what you were doing to becoming a teacher?
Yeah, really good question. So many directions to take that answer. I think a lot of near-death experiencers, when you feel nothing but expanded love and just this deep connection to God, you know, divine intelligence that loves you so much, you come back here and you realize that other people don't know that much about love. They don't know what it's like to ever have felt that. You know, they've had pieces of it from their childhood, and I had kind of a rough childhood. So there was a lot that I was missing it in the form of love before that near-death experience. And, you know, if I talk about it too much, people don't relate to that. They relate more to the struggles of life. And what I found is that I would walk the streets of any particular city, and in those early years, I was so happy just to be alive, just that my consciousness filled up this body. I was walking. It didn't matter if I had on, you know, an old t-shirt and not stylish clothes. I was just walking, and that was, you know, brilliant. That was amazing. I was so grateful for that. And people were overwhelmed with worry, and I could see them consumed in their lives with pain and anguish and worry. And is this going to work out? And, you know, I've failed in my career, or, oh, this person's mad at me. Am I ever going to find someone to love? Like, they just, you know, those constant worries that people have in their minds. And I just wanted to say, hey, look at the tree. Isn't it beautiful? You know, like, let's be children. Let's dance in the street. You know, let's, and, you know, that kind of attitude was looked at like, are you insane?
You know, what drugs? What drugs? Yes. Okay. I want some of that. Okay. As you bring that up though, there's that nature thing, that nature connection that you were so much more aware of.
Yeah. That there's peace and healing in nature. And that was one of my messages in the near-death experience, was remind them to go to nature. And I think as time goes on, and I look at kids who don't even go outside, you know, at different apartment complexes, I'll drive by, there's not a single kid in the pool in the summer, and they're all on video games, all indoors, all at the mall, you know, just that alone. I see so many depressed teenagers and depressed college students who don't know that there's a beautiful river out behind the college where I teach, and I make a point of taking them out to meditate and even walk along the river one day just to assess their moods and go, do I feel better after walking along this river? Do my problems seem smaller? Do I have more clarity after meditation and a walk? And all of them say, even to some level, you know, that they feel better after that. And so I remind them, this is something you can do every day to help your mind, to clear yourself from this constant connection and need for entertainment and choices, because it's not leading to happiness. It's really not. I mean, there are beautiful connections that we make through social media, but we have to be connected to nature and to the people around us, or we're missing out on a big part of life.
Tricia Barker's website is TrishaBarkerNDE.com. You can check that out. Be the light of your own healing. When you see that, you'll know you found it. But it talks about her book, also readings that you might be interested in if you'd like to have a session with her. Wendy's Coffee House. Angels in the OR. What Dying Taught Me About Healing, Survival, and Transformation by Tricia Barker. Okay, you can also connect with angels.
I work with the angels, and I will sit with people, and we will see what kind of guidance we can get from them. And sometimes that guidance seems to be energy work as well.
You have a huge, huge heart energy. Your heart chakra is absolute. I mean, that's what's causing some of that phasing with our with this channel. It comes through. The more you talk, the more you tune in, and the more you vibrate that frequency. And so that's what I'm seeing. Is that, and sensing and feeling and hearing, is that the more you engage with this and the more you are aligning with that true purpose, then it just comes through you. It's in every pore, and because that hasn't gone away, and the more you are doing this kind of work, the more you're amplifying that, and I'm sure you feel that. But it's amazing to see that just come through just in the interview. You know, I'm used to being around energy, but definitely with what you have been given, that you have incredibly amplified. Does that make sense to you?
Oh, yeah, it really does. Thank you for saying that, because I do have a heart for people, and I really do want people to be happier and more at peace. And I think that I've asked many times as I'm speaking, you know, whether that's an interview or my YouTube channel or working with students, whatever it may be, that someone experienced a moment of healing that the angels might work through. And maybe it's on an energy level, maybe it's something that's said that gives someone hope and a chance for just a different perspective that adds something beautiful to their lives. So thank you for seeing that.
Well, the thing is, after working in radio and broadcasting and with, you know, electronics and knowing they can go wonky, then we tend to want to fix the electronics. It's like, okay, it's an electronic problem. Well, actually, no, it's a frequency problem. And the person who is on the frequency is kind of jamming the circuit. And so basically, with all that fantastic energy, you're jamming the circuit. And that is an indication that it's working, not that there's a problem. It's an indication of this is in flow. This is how it manifests. And so where we want everything to be a certain way when we're using frequencies and, you know, trying to do a radio or television or some kind of broadcast, this is an indicator that there isn't a problem, that there's an amplification. And sometimes it blows our circuits. And that's the highest compliment that we can get. Okay. That it's like, oh, yay, it's on. Okay. And so that I'm like, this is excellent, because it's a demonstration and it's a validation of the kind of energy that you're able to transmit and broadcast as you do your work and you connect with people. And for me, I liked it when you got to the end of the book and you said this booming voice, not the end of the book, but close enough. Anyway, the booming voice that said, you're done being a teacher. And you're like, well, okay. And there's that apprehensive thing of, uh-oh. does that mean I'm checking out soon? Do I need to go back? Can you do my cards? Do my cards quick, you know, the tea leaves, whatever it takes, just give me a hint. And I think, you know, from the expanded perspective, you know, they're going, chuckle, chuckle, chuckle. Oh, they're so human. So anyway, my thing was this, what you were doing in a beautiful, wonderful way was learning to be a teacher and learning to connect with people on that level where you were bringing everything to the game, not just the education aspect, but the human aspect and looking in their eyes and seeing, is this person connected? Is there something I can do? Did it make a change when I changed the topic, when I had to meditate? All of those things to help people engage with the content and not necessarily with the individual in front of them, because we tend to, you know, your hair is too short, your dress is too long, all that stuff. And that takes it off the table, because when that heart connection is there, all that stuff suddenly is just like window dressing or, you know, a lampshade. It doesn't, and it's see-through.
Oh yeah. I'm so glad that you picked up on that, because I've read somewhere that you have 15 seconds to change the minds of your students when you first meet them. You know, like they're making judgments about you that quickly. And so I really ramp up the energy in those first 15 seconds, and I'm like sending them love. And the minute I start talking with them, I see some of those defenses fall. Like, it's not, you know, they're not judging me based on the way I dress or how I look or, you know, the coffee in my hand or, you know, whatever.
Right.
I mean, some
right.
of that goes on, but it starts to drop, and I see like some recognition in their eyes of, oh, this is going to be one of those professors or teachers who actually cares about me. You know, and I see a little bit of hope flicker on
right.
in their eyes, and I think, oh, it's that simple. You know, we just send them love.
Well, and that's something that I think is sometimes overlooked or discounted or underappreciated, that when we do engage and we are fully present, there's an energy that transmits that. And so you can feel enveloped in someone's presence when they are broadcasting at that level. And that to me is what you demonstrate. And so no matter, it isn't about the words even, it's not about the labels. It's about the simply being in a space and elevating everybody there because of the frequency that you are broadcasting that says, I am present. And so you're bringing that through. And you do mention God a lot in the book, just because of your complete and total shift. And when you say that you connected with the Jesus element, and then your mom gets a different perspective on that, which is like, well, you know, everybody has their own way to go. But I know that was a challenge when here you had this extraordinary contact and this, you know, been there, done that, here it is. And then it's hard to convince even your closest people with that. How did you deal? How did you deal?
Yeah, you know, since I've started talking publicly more frequently the last 3 years about near-death experiences, I've come to realize, because I've interviewed several near-death experiencers, that we're all attacked by two crowds. And I'll take the atheist any day, because they have the same old argument, you know, every time about that's just the brain shutting down, and, you know, they just go for that argument. But there are some people who don't like near-death experiences that don't mirror the Bible exactly, that, you know, talk too much about angels or consciousness or love, or don't see a religious figure, don't see Jesus, and they have a lot of fear, and they want to say that, oh, your whole experience was of the devil, and, you know, that's just, you know, you've been tricked. And that's a hard one for me, because I know my own experience, and I know that it changed me so dramatically. And over the years, I tried to remind my mom, because she was part of a church that discredited near-death experiences because they weren't biblical enough. And I had to remind her that, look, I changed because of that love. My whole entire set point and being and way of being in this world dramatically changed. And I know that that was not of some demonic force. I know that that was touching a love that is greater and offered greater grace and greater peace than anything I'd ever known in this life. And I hope that that sunk in. It may not, you know, like yeah, people are ready for the message when they're ready for it. And most of the time they come, people who talk with me who come from extremely evangelical backgrounds or just, you know, Bible bookers, as they call it, the Bible.
Uh-huh.
Usually when they've lost a kid to a drug overdose, or, you know, the family member or loved one has committed suicide, or they are in a place where they're shaken by life, I think they look to these experiences to give them a little hope.
Tricia Barker will continue with more about that NDE and the angels.
As an agnostic, I could go, okay, cool, consciousness survives. But then when I saw the angels, I was like, what is this? This is different. This is otherworldly. I felt like a kid. You know, they were so unexpected.
Wendy's Coffee House, that's Tricia Barker. NDE experience with angels. And really, really a life-changing experience because, for one, she didn't believe in angels. Angels in the OR. What dying taught me about healing, survival, and transformation. Tricia Barker.
There are people who will literally call me and they, will pay for time with me simply because they're surrounded by people and they love these people who think differently from them, and they just want to talk with someone a little more open-minded. I find that kind of cute and funny.
Yeah. Who gets them? Yeah. It's like, okay, it's okay for me to think these things because you died and you came back and everything is good.
Yeah. And I don't believe everything that everyone around me believes. I just
right.
take a moment.
Yeah. Well, and part of this too, I think it's interesting because we have certain concepts and preconceived socially mandated kinds of ways to think or be or act, systems that have been long established that are supposed to solve all of our ills. And we still are compounding our ills by doing everything we're not supposed to be doing according to those systems. And so it's like, okay, what's really relevant here? And it goes back to, do you love? Are you loved? Can you love? What is love? And that one seems to be a big struggle. Gee.
Yeah. So some of the near-death experiencers who I've interviewed who have had a more religious experience, like Howard Storm, he told me in an interview that the toughest thing to teach his congregation was to love others who are not like them. So people who were not Christians, love them. People who were, a different race, love them. You know, to love everyone. He said that was the hardest concept for people.
And see, that's supposedly one of the biggies, love. And so as long as we're struggling with love, well, we got some things to work through.
Yeah. And that was the concept that I wanted, my family to get as well, that look, I could be the prodigal daughter. I could be, the wild one or the one that you think is should go to hell. And I'm loved just as much as you. So think how much you're loved. We're all loved.
Yeah.
We're truly, truly loved. We're not doing this wrong. We're doing it, according to our own soul's plan. And just be certain that you're loved. It's not a competition.
Okay.
I'm loved just as much as you.
When you go back into the angels, because there's a lot of interest and there are people who will tell you, well, you're in the company of angels and I see them all around you. And you said you have moments when they are present, like if you're in danger or if there are worries or whatever. How do you suggest, since you've been there, done that, making yourself a little more aware of that presence around you? What do you suggest?
I ask people, and I do this with myself as well, to verbally ask. And those are the times I've seen them. When I felt afraid, I will ask out loud and say, I need you in my life right now. I need some extra guidance or protection. But there are people who call in angels frequently to help when they take their vitamins or their medicine, that may this medicine help my body. Please add that extra energy, that extra love. And people who are now, you brought up Reiki, there are several Reiki workers who are actually outside of operating rooms, in hospitals, working with people as they go into surgery. And that makes me so happy because I think, yes, the angels are there. Why not, have people ask for more? And so I've had people going into surgery email me and say that they've connected with their angels before that surgery and they know they're going to be okay. And they believe in that connection. So I would say just verbally ask for them and make yourself more aware. And when you can't see them, which most of the time that isn't what people are open to, because that makes, that makes you wonder, too much. Not everyone wants to visually see them. The energy is beautiful. So if you close your eyes in meditation and ask for them to be with you, you might feel a presence at your right side or left side. And that presence can send you extra love and healing as you're in meditation.
Now you're describing lights, but so what is it like to see the angels? What do they look like? What did they look like to you?
They can be very large, even larger than the ones I saw in surgery. So the ones in surgery were 9 feet. I asked for protection, and I don't know if these are guardian angels, but they looked even larger at one time. They looked to be, you know, just monstrously large, but beautifully large. And I remember looking up and going, okay, I feel safe, you know, thanks. And maybe it's their playful way of manipulating their form to make you feel better in that moment that they are with you. And I think they can change their forms to some degree. And that's part of why, you know, we're met with what we need in a moment, and we're met with what we need on the other side too. So maybe that's why descriptions are different from person to person, that they're meeting us where we need them.
I remember, I can't remember who it was, but somebody, the person who met them, well, the being who met him was a cat. And that was because that was one of the, he had a very strong relationship with the cat, and the cat was there like, okay, good to see you.
Yeah, I love those stories of people on the other side. I think it was Jan Price who was first met by her dog, a golden retriever. And to her, that was love. And so the dog came bounding toward her full of love. And so many of us do have that unconditional love bond with our pets. And so it makes sense that they'd be there.
Well, so for going forward, there is a part of the book that talks about a script in progress. Are you, any ideas on how long or what's going to come with that?
Well, it was a ton of fun, and I went with faith and guidance with this. But one of the editors of my book, Chris Brethwaite, he had worked on short films, and I said, well, and he's always wanted to write a longer film, and I said, well, you have such an understanding of near-death experiences, let's just write the script together. And so we had a ton of fun doing that, and we just finished it up. And now I think after the book, I've kind of focused on the book for a while since that came out in April. I think now I'm just beginning to think, well, what are the next steps to making this a movie? Because there's so many people who don't read, and, you know, I'm not glad the book is available in Audible, but the big screen and Netflix and Amazon and all these different outlets, I think, get into people's consciousness on a different level. It becomes more mainstream, and I'd love to see my near-death experience and others become more mainstream, but my story is one of healing, and I've been through a lot in life, and I think that's why I want my story out there, because I want people with PTSD and complex PTSD and wounds to know that you can live a beautiful life, and those spiritual lessons and that spiritual healing is available to all of us. And it, you know, it changes everything.
And Tricia's website is TrishaBarkerNDE.com. You can book a reading there. She does deal with angels. She also deals with other spirit guides. And if you have a relative, deceased family member, you can connect with them as well. No promises, but check out the website for details on that. Again, TrishaBarkerNDE.com is the website. And the book, Angels in the OR, you can get it at Amazon. Just Google Angels in the OR, Tricia Barker. We don't always have time to get into the details, so I offer links and some of the extra information from the shows on the blog, either Talking to Nightlights or Wendy's Coffee House. Other links are in the description for this show. Wendy's Coffee House, thanks for listening.